From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Now I'm here with Tyler Schultz. He is here with me at GFX. He is our keynote speaker today at lunch, and he has a story that is that I haven't heard personally, so I'm really looking forward to it. He was involved in an interesting story that ended up turning into a book. I don't know if it was a movie, but why don't we get your background and what's making you famous?
Yeah, so I guess what put me on the map is being a whistleblower for this company called Theranos, and what they promised to do was to revolutionize healthcare by essentially inventing this technology that could do anything a central laboratory could do, but with just a single drop of blood, and supposedly anywhere where you had access to power. So you could do these tests in medevac helicopters, in battlefields, in Walgreens, in Safeways, in operating rooms, in patients' homes. So it sounded like this technology just really had no limitations. Unfortunately, it simply didn't exist. But Elizabeth, by selling this vision, was able to raise almost $1 billion in funding. It obtained a $9 billion valuation. And then once myself and a couple other whistleblowers kind of exposed them to the Wall Street Journal, the company entirely collapsed.
So this was Elizabeth Holmes. She became famous. She was a blonde, attractive, great presenter, and she was able to just sort of spin the story with things that weren't true in order to raise all that money.
Right, and she had this very compelling personal story as well. So she modeled her story very much intentionally after Steve Jobs. So she dropped out of Stanford when she was 19 years old. She wore black turtlenecks modeled after Steve Jobs. She constantly compared herself to Steve Jobs and got other people to compare her to Steve Jobs as well. She ultimately became the youngest self-made female billionaire. She was on the cover of Forbes and Fortune and Inc. She would say things like, "I'm doing well by doing good." So she just positioned herself as kind of this darling of Silicon Valley. And that was at a time when we were really craving a female Steve Jobs, and perhaps we still are.
Yeah.
And so she saw that and kind of served herself up on a platter for the media to kind of indulge.
Okay, so let's talk about where you were in your life during this time, because you're a young guy. Maybe give a little bit of your background at that point. I believe you're related to George Shultz, our former Secretary of State under the Reagan White House. And so you come from a really good family, and you're a young guy, and then you go to work for a startup?
Right, yeah. So when I joined, I felt like, you know, this is a company where I could work my entire career. This was my first job out of college, and I thought it might also be my last job.
Yeah. And it turns out, especially with how valuable it is, an early employee is going to have a pretty good stake in the company.
And when I joined on that first day, it did feel like you were joining Apple in the earliest days. There was so much hype. There was so much enthusiasm. Frankly, there was just a lot of Kool-Aid drinking, where you just felt like you were part of something huge, but it did not take long to realize,
Were you a business guy or a technologist?
More on the technology side.
Okay.
So at Stanford, I was a mechanical engineering major, but then actually Elizabeth kind of became like one of my mentors, and she kind of urged me to change my major to biology. So in my senior year, the last two quarters, I switched to a biology major, somehow managed to graduate, but I was definitely on the tech side.
Okay, so walk me through the story. When did you first start noticing that stuff was not right?
So the first time I noticed things were not right was actually on my very first day. So it did not take long, because my first day happened to be the day that we quote unquote launched the product. And we had been in stealth mode for over 10 years at that point. They were incredibly secretive. So it was an amazing day to join the company when we finally told the world about what we were doing. Patients could go into Walgreens and get these tests done. But on that day, I came to learn that even though we quote-unquote launched this product, that there were zero tests that our technology was actually capable of running. So if a patient walked into Walgreens to do one of these tests, first of all, they would not get the finger prick they were promised. They would get a venous draw. And then on top of that, we wouldn't even run that sample on Theranos equipment. We would just send it to other labs, or we would run it on third-party equipment and essentially just dilute their blood.
Well, okay, so you knew that early on, and then your first day on the job, you're not, what did you do? Were you able to say anything to other employees or to Elizabeth herself?
Yeah, well, I quickly started talking to other employees, because once I started working with the technology itself, the red flags became even more apparent, because it became clear that this was never going to be able to do the things that Elizabeth claimed. So I tried to prove myself wrong as best I could. I talked to my colleagues, I talked to my managers, I ultimately talked to a vice president, the COO and president, the CEO, a board member, because my grandfather actually joined the board around that same time. And then I even reached out to a regulator who said that this is what they were doing was a violation of their regulations. But then pretty much at every turn, I was ignored, and then ultimately I was bullied, I was gaslit, I was threatened. And it wasn't until I actually spoke to a Wall Street Journal reporter and they started digging in and asking really tough questions that kind of the whole thing started to unravel.
What did your grandfather say?
Well, he really just didn't believe me.
Oh.
And from his perspective, I could see how it would be hard to believe. You know, you have people that he had trusted for a long, long time who were very, very smart people telling him that Theranos was the greatest thing ever. And then he just has his one point of information, his grandson, telling him that it's all fraud, it's all fake. So he just simply didn't believe me. He said, like, these are currently in operating rooms, these are operational in medevac helicopters in Afghanistan. And I just told him there's no way that can be true. He was just being told these elaborate and just lies that were so big that you couldn't possibly think, like, this can't be true. It's like so big that you just can't believe that anyone would have the audacity to make it up.
And how many employees were with the company at that time when you went to the Wall Street Journal?
At that time, I think there were probably around 400.
Okay, so it's a small enough company where you know what's going on. I mean, it's a pretty good sized company because it's raised so much money, but the revenues are not strong, I assume, if it doesn't provide the service that it's supposed to.
No, and that's actually, I didn't even realize how big of a fraud it really was until much later. And so the SEC launched this big investigation eventually, and they actually found instances where Elizabeth was pitching prospective investors that their revenue the previous year was $100 million. And in reality, their revenue the previous year was $100,000.
No way. Oh my goodness.
He was lying by orders of magnitude and in practically every way that you could about the technology and also about the business and about the revenues they were generating.
Do you think she was delusional and thought she would just get away with it? Because eventually things like that are going to catch up to you.
I don't know what she thought. Like, there was no way that this was going to end well for her. And she obviously knew, like, the lies were so intentional and so elaborate that there's no way she didn't know. She absolutely knew this was fake and was continuing to build out this web of lies. But I don't know what the end game was. She knew she wouldn't be able to IPO because she knew once you're a public company, there's just way too much scrutiny. So anytime an investor invested, she told them upfront, we will never IPO because there's so many advantages to being a private company. We will never IPO. So she got ahead of that conversation before it even became a discussion with those investors.
Did she line her own pockets with some of the funds that were raised? Did she pay herself a great salary or anything?
She paid herself a decent salary, not an exorbitant amount. But what she did do was she loaned herself $25 million from the company.
Oh.
And then she used some of that money to then buy back stock. So she owned more than 50% of the company and was also taking out loans.
And driving up the stock price by buying stock.
Yeah, so it's like there was some shady stuff going on. But she pretended to live a very austere life. Like, if you read articles from the time when the company launched, they describe her as, like, one, actually a board member, Henry Kissinger, described her as being almost like part of the monastic order because of how she had this monk-like devotion to Theranos. Like, she said she would never have a boyfriend, she would never get married, she would never have kids, she didn't have friends. She lived in a one or two bedroom apartment in Palo Alto, and she showed this apartment to a reporter who kind of described it as just, you know, a simple closet full of bat turtlenecks and a refrigerator with water bottles, but her whole life was devoted to Theranos. But in reality, she was living in a mansion in Atherton with her boyfriend, who was also happened to be the CEO of the company. So everything she did was just put on for show.
So you go to the Wall Street Journal. What happens after that? Is that when everything started to unravel?
Yeah, so once I go to the Wall Street Journal, Theranos discovers that I'm a source here pretty quickly based on the things that the Wall Street Journal is asking them. And so they come after me with all the legal power they have. They hired some of the most powerful attorneys in the country to come after me. They hired private investigators.
Were you still an employee of the company?
No, I left the company.
Okay, you left the company. Did you, before you went to the Wall Street Journal, you left the company?
Right.
I was wondering about that because I mean, stay with the company, because did they fire you or did you quit?
I ultimately quit. So I started raising concerns, and they essentially created a hostile work environment and kicked me out. So the president of the company, Sonny, called me arrogant, ignorant, patronizing, reckless. He said I had no understanding of math, science, or statistics, and he only wanted an apology from me moving forward. So then I said, yeah, consider this my 2 weeks notice. If you want me to leave today, that's fine with me as well. And unsurprisingly, they wanted me to leave that day.
Okay, so you leave, you go to the Wall Street Journal, starts unraveling for them. How did it play out?
So again, they come after me with all this legal firepower with private investigators. I end up getting lawyers myself. So I got like a very specialized IP attorney. I got a criminal defense lawyer. I got a defamation lawyer. I got a litigator. I got whistleblowing attorneys. I ended up spending between $400,000 and $500,000 in legal fees defending myself. But ultimately, the Wall Street Journal finally started publishing these articles, which then led to a plethora, they call it like an alphabet soup of investigations. We're talking like CMS, FDA, SEC, DOJ, FBI. All those organizations started investigating Theranos. And I think the company ended up spending like hundreds of millions of dollars, either settling lawsuits and on their legal fees. And then ultimately the company just went bankrupt. And then Elizabeth and Sonny had their criminal trial just about wrapped up a little more than a year ago. And they're currently in prison. For Sonny got a 14-year sentence and Elizabeth got an 11-year sentence.
Is there anything that you would do different looking back at it?
Yes, I would pretty much do everything differently.
So really?
Luckily, I can look back on this experience and I don't have any major regrets. Like, I don't look back and say, man, that really hurt me. That really killed me. That really, like, that wasn't me. That wasn't in line with my character. Everything I did, I can stand behind. But there's tons that I could have done better, for sure. One of those things is, I wish while I worked at the company, I had spoken to a lawyer. And at the time I was too afraid to talk to a lawyer. I had never interacted with the legal system. You know, I don't think I fully understood what the role of a lawyer was. I didn't know, how much they would cost. I didn't even know how to go about finding a lawyer, really. But I wish I had spoken to a lawyer while I worked at the company, and they could have helped me take the information I needed to take out of the company and safely deliver it to government channels where I could be a protected whistleblower.
Okay, so now I do a little bit of venture capital, and so we make an investments. You know, I typically bet on the founder.
Yeah.
What could have tipped me off so that I didn't make an investment there?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot. So I think with angel investors, there's a lot of lessons here, because I consider what Elizabeth did to be the biggest angel round of all time. Like, when you're an angel investor, typically you meet with a founder over coffee, and then you, if you're a wealthy individual, you can cut them like a $50,000 check based on that coffee interaction. And you're placing a bet on the person. She took that model and got individuals to invest over $100 million, which is just outrageous. At that point, you need to have a process. And people who had processes did not invest in the company. And I've spoken to some of the top venture capitalists in Silicon Valley, like Vinod Khosla, for instance, who said, like, yes, she pitched me. I went and I visited the company. I ran a process. The process said, don't invest, and we didn't. And in a lot of ways, I actually think that Silicon Valley venture capital doesn't get enough credit for not investing in Theranos, because they had smart people on their teams, they had processes in place, and they actually listened to the outcome of that process.
So venture capitalists, by term, they did not invest. It was only angel investors?
It was mostly...
That's a lot of angel investing.
It's a lot of angel investing. But wow. Like, she had investors like Rupert Murdoch from the Wall Street Journal, Betsy DeVos, Larry Ellison, Robert Kraft, even some like Hall of Fame NFL player, Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, yeah.
And so what she was able to do is prey on people who did not really understand what they were investing in and only invested in her. And she preyed on these individual decision makers. And I think one of the biggest lessons for investors here is that individual decision makers make really bad decisions. So even if you are an angel investor investing your own money, I would highly recommend that you have a group of people who you're allowed, who you can go source deals with, whether you can do that, you know, through some kind of, you know, shared NDA or CDA that you agree with that company. But like, having a way to get more people to look at it, because everyone has their own blind spots. And so you want people with a different background than you, maybe a different age, maybe a different gender, get people with all kinds of perspectives to look at these deals to help fill in each other's blind spots.
Okay, so what did I not ask you that would be interesting for our audience, and maybe any closing thoughts?
Well, there's so much to talk about here. So my closing thoughts are after Theranos, I went and I actually started two diagnostics companies myself. I left the last one about a year ago to focus on being a dad and being a good husband for a little while and, you know, take a breath and leave all that stress behind me. And at this point in time, I'm really focused on actually telling, speaking about my experience at Theranos, because I do think that there are tons of lessons here. Like, when you look at everyone who had to fail to enable a Theranos to happen, it was the executives, it was the employees to an extent, it was the board, it was investors, it was the media, it was regulators. So I think that there are tons of lessons for all of those various stakeholders. And so what I want to do now is just tell my story more intentionally and help all those stakeholders, you know, learn some lessons and hopefully avoid these big failures in the future. And then also, I think that there are just ways that companies can almost use these lessons as like their superpower, like using ethics as actually a competitive advantage.
Well, Tyler, I appreciate you coming on the show and coming to speak at GFX, and it's I'm proud to know you. So thank you for standing
thank you so much
for what you believe in. That's not easy. So good
appreciate
job.
It.
Great job. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.